another episode of Disrupt. I'm Joyce Famakinwa at Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with David Grabowski, a professor of healthcare policy at Harvard Medical School, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Home Care Homebase. Looking to build physician partnerships and increase home health referrals? How about expanding in new locations through mergers and acquisitions? Homecare Homebase helps growing agencies of all sizes streamline processes and enhance interoperability with a flexible blueprint for long-term success. We'll help you attract top talent, enhance clinical care with expert tools that allow physicians to complete required documentations at home, not just after hours. We can also tackle revenue cycle management for you, giving you more time to focus on the patients and families who need you. Grow your business with the number one industry leader. To learn more, visit hchb.com. When you have the opportunity to speak to somebody that has their finger on the pulse as much as our guest today, you get to cover a wide range of topics. David Grabowski is a well-known expert in the post-acute care services realm. In addition to his role at Harvard, David is a member of the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, or MedPAC. During our conversation, we talked about topics ranging from the future of SNF at home programs to home care spending. David also discussed a unified post-acute payment system and so much more. One note for our listeners, our conversation took place in March before the major announcement from the Biden administration about a proposal that called for Congress to redirect $400 billion towards home-based care. Unfortunately, I didn't get David's take on this, but as I mentioned, we get into a lot of other interesting topics. David, thank you for joining us today. Where are you joining us from?
I'm joining you from just outside of Boston at my home.
Nice. So for those who haven't seen the home healthcare news articles that you've been featured in over the past few years, can you get into your background and what you've been up to recently? You're a busy guy.
Well, thanks. So first, Joyce, thanks so much for having me on. I've been really busy of late, like many of your listeners, I'm certain, with COVID. But just to step back, so I'm a professor of healthcare policy at Harvard Medical School. My research predominantly focuses on long-term care and post-acute care services for older adults. I have a few different policy roles. I serve on the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, or MedPAC. I also serve on the CMS Nursing Home Technical Expert Panel that advises on Nursing Home Compare. I've been on some other technical expert panels at CMS related to home health care. And I also, during the coronavirus, was part of the CMS Nursing Home Coronavirus Commission. And then, as you suggested, Joyce, I've been very busy. In addition to my regular research on long-term care and post-acute care, I've been doing a lot of research and writing and op-ed pieces and you name it, think pieces about coronavirus and long-term care and nursing homes in particular, but very, very interested across the spectrum and how this virus has impacted not just recipients of these services, but also the caregivers and going forward, the business model as well. So once again, delighted to be here and spend some time talking to you today about these issues.
Well, thank you for walking us through that, David. And just as an aside for our listeners, I would strongly encourage you all to kind of go online and look up these pieces that David's talking about. He has some very kind of valuable insights that he can share with all of us. So at the start of the year, we heard that policymakers and healthcare executives had begun to rethink senior care as a result of the pandemic. This meant greater investment around the home. Where does the U.S. stand today around its home care spending compared to other countries?
So it's a really great place to start. We're, you know, ahead of some countries, but unfortunately behind others. We're sort of in that kind of big middle part of the distribution. There's sometimes when you look at the U.S. relative to other countries and we're an outlier. When it comes to home care spending, we're a bit of an inlier, maybe even towards the lower end, and especially with some of our European friends were definitely behind investment in the home and the community. And even kind of drilling down within the U.S., as you know, Joyce, there are certain markets that have seen, or even states that have seen, quite a bit of investment in services in the home, whereas other parts of the U.S. kind of lag behind. So I think the story here is very mixed, whether you compare us to other countries around the globe, or if you even just look across the U.S. with some areas doing relatively well and other areas not so well.
You were critical about the idea that more investment in the home needed to mean less investment in nursing homes and other long-term care facilities. Can you talk a little bit more about that notion?
Sure. So I think we've set up this false dichotomy in many ways that every dollar that's spent on home and community-based care has to come out of the nursing home. First and foremost, I should be very clear. I'm for individuals getting long-term care services in the home or the community. That's what people want. That's what I would like to see them get. However, my research, along with experience of many decades here in the U.S. and other countries around the world, it's very hard to abolish or eliminate nursing homes. There's always going to be some group of individuals who need nursing home services. So let's get as many individuals as we can home and community-based services. But for those individuals that need to enter a nursing home, let's make those nursing homes as strong as possible. And I think that means reimagining nursing homes. Nursing homes today are far too institutional. The staffing is far too hierarchical, and they don't really meet the needs of the residents. It's not about resident quality of life and quality of care. Very few facilities around the country are resident directed. If you talk to residents, they feel, you know, very little sense of purpose or control over their lives. And so we need to flip that, basically. And so I've really called for both investment in home and community-based services, but also investment in reimagining nursing homes. And I, once again, don't view those as opposing goals. I view them as complementary, and that we need to set up a spectrum or a system of services that both meet the needs of those individuals who receive care in the community, but also individuals who might need to receive care in an institutional setting. Let's make that setting less institutional and more home-like. And that means, you know, potentially smaller home environments where the staff are well compensated and valued, and the residents have control over their environment.
Along those same lines, skilled nursing facility, or SNF, to home diversion remains a hot topic. What are you seeing around this? And are there kind of any emerging trends, or what are you seeing in terms of data?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. Following the pandemic, as hospital care, at least elective procedures, really stopped, it really became intensive care focused with COVID. You know, SNF care, because of the 3-day rule, really closely mirrors inpatient use. And not surprisingly, when inpatient use was down for most of the past year, so was skilled nursing facility use. And home health, at least initially, also experienced some decline just because, you know, fewer individuals are leaving the hospital. But over the summer, it was really this past summer that home health use began to rebound. And it was really fascinating and really reflecting this desire of individuals to receive services in their home. And this has always been true. It was true pre-pandemic, but it's particularly true right now with, you know, all the issues that skilled nursing facilities are experiencing around the pandemic. So we've seen this kind of diverging trends where home health is very much rebounding and starting to look relatively strong compared to pre-pandemic levels, whereas skilled nursing facilities are still at relatively low census and really struggling to get those new admissions.
For sure. But to kind of stay on this, it is my understanding, though, that there is still some good news in the nursing home space right now. It sounds like, you know, they're doing a good job of getting residents vaccinated. I think I saw you maybe tweet about the rate of vaccinations.
So I think this has been, after a really tough year for nursing homes, the fact that long-term care facilities broadly and nursing homes in particular were prioritized for the COVID vaccine was really encouraging, and I think was sort of a ray of bright light for an industry where it's been pretty dark over the past year. So to date, we've seen over 7.5 million doses administered in long-term care facilities. The rate has definitely slowed down as the clinics have transitioned from nursing homes to assisted living. I think as you get into smaller assisted living facilities, just the daily rate of vaccinations will slow down. But I think there's pretty good evidence that part of the real decline we're seeing in cases and deaths that have been going on now for quite a while, you know, almost since the start of the calendar year, are attributable to the vaccine. That's not to say it's completely related to the vaccine. Some of the decline was happening even before the vaccine clinics were in place. But I do think there's some pretty good evidence out there that the vaccine clinics have helped to contribute to the big decline that we've experienced. So that's really encouraging. And just pick up on part of your question there. I think if there was an area of concern here, the vaccination rates among the residents have been really strong. So data around 80-85% is kind of what we're hearing in terms of the kind of the conventional kind of numbers that are out there. Staff rates have been lower, and that's something that's received a lot of attention about the hesitancy on the part of staff. I think one ongoing concern moving forward is how do we continue to vaccinate new staff and new residents and continue to vaccinate those staff who are initially hesitant but may later be receptive to getting vaccinated. As you know, Joyce, the staff in a lot of these settings are quite fluid, as are the residents. You know, you're always going to have new admissions. And so getting a plan in place to actually vaccinate new staff and new residents will be important, in addition to continuing to vaccinate those individuals who may have at first been hesitant but now are willing to go forward with it.
So last year, we saw home health providers, instead of just going after SNF patients, set up their own SNF at-home services. Unity Point at Home and LHC Group are two great examples of this. What's your high-level take on the SNF at-home concept?
Yeah, this is a really fascinating model. And indeed, I should say, in the spirit of full disclosure, I was involved in a pilot project with some colleagues here at Harvard, you know, at the Brigham, which is one of our Harvard affiliated hospitals, to actually pilot one of these programs as well. And we saw it was a very small study, and it's still out under peer review, but we actually found relatively, you know, positive results around the model. But once again, a very kind of small intervention that was being tried here. The reason it was so small is that, you know, Medicare isn't yet, you know, paying for this. It's, you know, when we did the trial, we really had to go forward with this model when we tested it pre-pandemic with just internal funding. And so the model, I think, has a lot of promise in that you're basically getting services for where the individual wants them. That's in their home. But you're not simply giving them home health. And that's not meant as a criticism of home health, but I really believe there's a group of post-acute care patients that could thrive in the home, but need more than the usual package of home health services. And that's really the SNF at home model. Like any new model, however, we have to really wonder about where kind of the demand for this model is going to come from. Is this really that we're going to pull individuals out of sort of SNF settings and deliver services for them at home and allow them to actually thrive in the community and potentially save, you know, payers money? Or is it going to be kind of largely individuals who would have gone home anyway, might have done fine under the home health benefit? Are we pulling some of those individuals into this new benefit? And does that lead to kind of higher spending? And so you'll hear me as somebody that worries a lot about kind of the future of the Medicare program and, you know, solvency and so forth. I'm a big proponent of encouraging high value post-acute care services and deterring those lower value services. We need to, when it comes to the SNF at home model, really make certain the model is targeting those higher value services that not only are offering kind of great quality and great outcomes for the beneficiary, but also kind of helping to offset some spending for the program. And we need to avoid those instances where the program isn't offering much additional quality or outcomes, but maybe leading to a lot more spending. And so very excited about the potential of the model, but also, Joyce, a little bit wary of who actually ends up receiving services under the model. And I think targeting there is going to end up being very important.
What does the future of reimbursement for SNF at home look like? Is this something Medicare can just roll into the home health benefit, for example?
You know, potentially, you know, we've seen so many changes under the pandemic, from telemedicine. You know, it used to be Medicare would only pay for this in rural areas, and now paying for it everywhere. And it does look like that's going to become permanent. There were other rule changes, for example, the 3-day waiver with skilled nursing facilities. I'm pretty convinced that that's going to go back in place, but you never know. And I do think going forward, you know, SNF at home is something that's going to get some attention, especially given all the interest in receiving services at home and avoiding kind of post-acute stays in institutional settings. And so I think, Joyce, it will get some consideration to kind of be made, you know, more permanent. But I think, once again, taking a really hard look at who's actually covered under this model and what does that mean for spending. And I think you hear this a lot with kind of new programs. There's this concern about opening up the floodgates, and just, you know, that could be a good thing if it was providing lots of great outcomes and quality. But I think that could be a real negative if we're not actually improving outcomes all that much, but just spending a lot more money. So I think we need to be careful. And I would love to see some bigger kind of pilot type programs or demos of SNF at home, where we actually test who is most appropriate for this model and how can we ensure that going forward, those are the individuals that are covered under the model.
Speaking of the home health benefit, MedPAC recommended a 5% cut to home health services recently. Well, this has kind of been a standing recommendation. Why does that make some sense as something to do from MedPAC's perspective? And to remind our listeners, you're a commissioner with MedPAC.
Yeah, sure. So, and just to be clear, I'm speaking for me, not for MedPAC, but obviously as somebody that has some insight into the process at MedPAC. But well, first, I think it comes back to that word I used earlier, value. We know that the margins, the Medicare margins for home health have been quite big in over the last, you know, as you said, that's a standing recommendation because those margins have been quite large. And, you know, other indicators that MedPAC uses to evaluate kind of the adequacy of payments seem to suggest, you know, this is a really robust sector, lots of for-profit entry. There aren't many Medicare beneficiaries that can't get services. This is a healthy industry, and that was true pre-pandemic. One question that I'm certain some listeners will want to ask is, well, wait a second, what about the pandemic? And I think with these rate increases, it's really important to separate what happened kind of with the natural kind of updates that occur every year versus what happened during the pandemic. And to the extent that, you know, post-acute care providers, whether it's whether it's here SNFs or home health agencies, but even other parts of the healthcare system like hospitals, physician offices, you name it, if they need resources, relief funds, let's get them those relief funds. But that doesn't mean we should build that into their annual update. And so I think treating those as two separate kind of issues. One, how do we make certain that all of our providers had the right tools in place to deal with the pandemic? I think we did kind of as a healthcare system, you know, and a lot to try to provide kind of relief funds to those different providers. But then kind of stepping back and saying, you know, are there areas where we think there may be some low value care here and we want to discourage that and maybe kind of cutting rates. And so I think that's it's really the perception that it's not that home health is bad or anything like that. It's that we're overpaying for kind of services right now. And there needs to be some adjustment there separate of anything that's going on with the pandemic.
Speaking about the March report, was there something that you thought was important to flag to our listeners today, something that you found particularly interesting? It covers a lot from margins and access to quality measures and just the sheer number of home health agencies out there, but wanted to see if there's anything you think our listeners should particularly like key into.
Sure. So this is the fourth year that I've been on the commission. So this is my fourth go around with these payment updates. And I have to say, and I already sort of touched on this earlier, but this was the most unique year. First, we had all the meetings virtually this year. So that was the first thing that was really unique. But I think with the pandemic of trying to separate out exactly what I just described of how do you think about the long-term health of a sector relative to the sort of short-term crisis that we've been in over the last year plus. And so I found that with all of the sectors to be kind of a new challenge in this cycle. And you'll notice that as I'm certain your listeners will want to read all 500 pages of the March report, but you know, if they have a kind of a long weekend or they're really, really bored or something and want to go through the entire report. But I do think the home health chapter is interesting, and like all of the chapters, in that it touches on not just kind of the usual sort of indicators of health for the sector, but also kind of more directly, how is home health impacted? And in some ways, you know, home health, just to contrast it once again with skilled nursing facilities, I actually see home health, you know, really kind of responding well coming out of this, that there may be a real pivot for some of our Medicare beneficiaries from skilled nursing facilities to home health. The bigger question, I think, is what's the future of skilled nursing facilities look like? And we talk some about that in the report as well. But, you know, and I'm really convinced that, you know, both will have a role going forward. But I actually see kind of a bigger role for home health and maybe a smaller role for skilled nursing facilities.
I want to talk about something that at this point I've had the pleasure of talking to you a lot about on panels for different stories with home healthcare news. Has our current environment gotten us closer or farther away from a unified post-acute payment system?
I actually believe, Joyce, it's gotten us closer, if you can believe it. So there's two parts to that answer. The first part is that we've made two big policy changes that are really consistent with the unified payment system. So for those who, you know, I was going to make a joke, for those in post-acute that have been sort of, you know, asleep for the last few years, unified post-acute care payment is the idea that we pay a similar rate. So you have a stroke patient leaving the hospital or a hip fracture patient, they would be associated with a common rate regardless of which kind of setting they ended up being discharged to after their inpatient stay. It's meant to sort of address some of the distortions under the current system. And it would pay based on patient characteristics versus kind of the amount of therapy right now. Well, two big kind of policy changes, the patient-driven payment model in SNFs and the patient-driven grouping models in home health, are both very consistent, as you know, Joyce, with the unified payment system. It's been really challenging, however, to sort of study both of those payment changes or to really think about what they meant for patient care, because right as the SNF PDPM basically came online in fourth quarter of 2019, and then the PDGM didn't come online until 2020. Well, that's both of them just got swamped by COVID. So it's really hard to know, you know, outside of that window before COVID really, you know, started happening in big numbers in February, March, you have a brief window with at least the PDPM to study it. We don't really know kind of what the impact was there, but we do have policies in place that now are driven not on how much therapy is delivered in those two settings, but rather what are the characteristics of patients that are receiving services. And then the second big change, Joyce, was this shift to, you know, under COVID, to really, you know, kind of worrying about kind of the needs of patients, and patients really kind of beginning to receive services across different settings. And this, some of the transition we've been discussing of patients who are formerly going to SNF now going to home health. And that's very consistent as well, that we're very worried about kind of patient needs and the ability to treat patients across multiple settings. And I think in some ways the PDGM for home health you know, was paying based on patient characteristics. And now with the pandemic, you're seeing, you know, kind of a influx of complex patients. And I think that system was probably much better matched than the old system to kind of treat those patients. So I think as we hopefully move to a post-pandemic world, we have some evidence about how, you know, how paying based on patient characteristics works, and, you know, how kind of stress testing these systems under the pandemic.
The last time we talked about this, we were living under a different administration. Has the Biden administration indicated moving one way or the other? Or just generally, what are you seeing from the Biden administration as it pertains to home-based care?
Sure. So my sense, I don't have a good sense on the post-acute care side. I don't have any reason to suspect that the Biden administration isn't receptive to it, but I haven't heard anything or seen anything to suggest, especially around unified payment or around a shift to home health. I will say, however, in terms of long-term care, you know, the encouragement of care in the home and the community, I've heard, you know, a lot of talk out of the Biden administration about wanting to grow the number of home and community-based waiver slots, for example, through Medicaid, provide support for family caregivers. So there's a lot of interest in home and community-based care in the Biden administration. So I expect there to be some expansion of those services in the coming years. And we'll see if that kind of happens on the post-acute care side as well, but definitely on the kind of Medicaid home care side, I do believe there'll be an expansion.
What has been the one thing that has surprised you in a bad way the most since last spring and the start of the public health emergency?
I think the thing that surprised me the most was just our ineffectiveness in getting resources to older adults and their caregivers. And we could talk through a lot of different explanations for that. I know that we often didn't prioritize, you know, our residents of long-term care and post-acute care settings or recipients in the community. They haven't always been our kind of number one priority, but this was really stark in that there were a simple set of things that could have happened during this pandemic, both for those in kind of institutional-based settings and those in the community, you know, such as personal protective equipment, testing, you know, support for the workforce. And speaking of that workforce, I don't think they received kind of the support, whether it was hazard or hero pay, or, you know, whether it was, you know, paid sick leave, other benefits like health insurance. I think we really could have done better by both our older kind of recipients of these services and also those that were providing care for them. And that actually surprised me. And I know some will say, oh, why are you surprised by that? And I just felt like when push came to shove, we would have stepped up in a bigger way. And it frustrates me that, you know, it didn't have to be this way over the past year. And we could have saved a lot of lives with an increased investment. The fact that we sat there every day and still seeing these big numbers of fatalities in long-term care and post-acute care settings and basically sitting idly by and not doing everything we can to get resources into those settings, I found that surprising.
What's one thing that has surprised you in a good way?
The fact that for the first time in my career, I think policy, unfortunately, as I just described, let us down, but I feel this tremendous level of interest and engagement from policymakers, finally, that are beginning to pay attention here, advocates, you know, reporters, media. Joyce, it used to be that you were the only one covering a lot of this. You have a lot of new colleagues now in your lane, on your corner here in your lane. It's amazing. And I think that reflects just like a lot of folks not appreciating like how dire some of the resources were in these sectors, some of the quality of care issues. And so I found it really discouraging that we didn't do more, but really encouraging that people are really interested in this area. We have a tremendous opportunity right now, and I hope we take advantage of it. We know there are some problems in these settings that we all kind of study and work in and live in and so forth. Let's get to work on them and begin to fix some of them. And that's kind of what surprised me in a good way, that I think a lot of people want to do this. And I don't want to lose that opportunity to actually kind of put good policies in place that are going to support older adults and their caregivers.
What are you most excited about right now in the post-acute care space, whether it's related to home-based care or not?
I'm really kind of still interested in these kind of big value-based payment models and how they can influence kind of the right services in the right setting. And so I've been really interested in both kind of ACOs and bundled payment as a way to kind of encourage high value services. But then how can post-acute care providers actually be a part of these models as well? And that could be institutional special needs plans for nursing homes. That can be different nursing home led ACOs, for example. I think the good news is I believe that these models have encouraged greater value, you know, overall, but the bad news is some of it's come, you know, at the expense of post-acute. And I would love to see post-acute have a greater voice in these models going forward and actually help to sort of encourage better outcomes. So that's an area that I'm really intrigued by and excited by, to see what are the kind of new models that are coming, you know, how are we going to rethink kind of payment and delivery going forward?
Well, David, I want to thank you again for joining Disrupt today. I am so glad that we were able to take some time and hear some of your insights on all of these different topics.
Great. Thanks, Joyce, for having me on.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Joyce Fumakinwa, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.